Thanks for coming. Or just staying, if you were here for Neil Adams. So my name's Mark Nobleman, and I was scheduled to be here with people that you've heard of, Tom King and Mark Andreyko. They are not with us today, unfortunately, but fortunately, we have incomparable pinch hitters, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves, but I'm just going to say their names, and they're both friends. They're both esteemed comics historians, and they have many other feathers in their caps, so it's a great honor for me that they're here to fill in for the guys that were scheduled to be here. So on my left is Danny Fingeroff, which is a perfect name for this topic. No relation. And on my right is Brad Ricca, and I'm going to let them take it from here and introduce themselves properly.
Hi, I'm Danny Fingeroff. I guess I'm here this weekend doing... I wrote and edited a lot of stuff for Marvel Comics. Spider-Man, and you heard of him, Dark Hawk, The Dazzler, also known as The Disco Dazzler. I have written books like Superman on the Couch and Disguised as Clark Kent. And I'm wrapping up now a biography of Stan Lee that I've written for St. Martin's Press. Should be out in November. And I'm doing a panel on that tomorrow at noon that will have Michael Hughes and Paul Levitz, Maggie Thompson, Marv Wolfman, Dennis Kitchen, and we just, John Sepper Jr., and we just added Todd McFarlane. So it's at noon tomorrow. Remembering Stan Lee. The book is called A Marvelous Life. The Amazing Story of Stan Lee will be out in the fall, and I'm just thrilled to be that Mark invited me, because Mark is one of like, the top 10 people I admire most for the work he's done on behalf of Bill Finger and his legacy. So that's who I am and why I'm here, and you're very good.
I'm actually Tom King. Because of my work with the CIA, I've had my features surgically altered to those of a pale Midwesterner from Cleveland. Now, I'm Brad Ricca. I wrote a book about the creators of Superman, which is where I met Mark, and his great work there is called Superboys. I have a book out now called Mrs. Sherlock Holmes, and a book coming next year called Olive the Lionheart. And I'm glad to be here, and thanks for asking me, Mark. Let's go.
Pleasure, yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah, it ties in thematically. For those of you who are fans or alumni of Dewey Clinton High School, as Bill Finger and Bob Kane were, tomorrow morning I'm doing a panel about Will Eisner and the memoir graphic novel. Will also went to Dewey Clinton, and that'll have Peter Cooper, Sarah Woolley, and Eddie Campbell on it, and then even later in the day, about guys who went to a different New York high school, but it's a history of DC Comics at 6:30. Okay, that's the end of my panel.
All right, let's go back in time. For those of you who don't know, I'll just briefly set this up. I'm a writer. I write mostly books for young people, and more than a decade ago, I decided to write a book about a guy named Bill Finger. And I think you all knew that name even then, but most people that I talked to at that time beyond comics who knew Batman did not know that name. So I wrote a picture book on Bill Finger called Bill the Boy Wonder. It came out in 2012. And this little picture book that could, it didn't start anything, but it took over from people who had started something even before I was born, namely Jerry Bales, a father of fandom, who was the person that exposed Bill Finger as the co-creator of Batman, back before there was any easy way to do that. And so I feel like I took a baton from him, not the baton, but a baton, and published that book, and then that book, we'll get into what happened after that, but I just wanted to set that up.
So my question maybe starts off, where did it, I mean, if you like Mark or follow Mark, he has this great, great website called Noble Mania, where he does all this pop culture stuff. And you just posted these pictures where you actually auditioned for the Robin role in that great masterpiece of cinema, Batman and Robin.
Right.
So how did you go from, you know, really being a fan of Batman to making that jump to, well, what about history? What about the creator? And then, like, what about Finger? I mean, what was that moment where you, like, maybe first heard his name and said, there's something there?
You know, you'd think that given how many years I put into this, I'd remember vividly when that started. I remember where my interest in superheroes started, but the Bill Finger part is a blur. I just know that I read a Wizard article that probably a lot of you read, probably about 2003, which was about Bill Finger. It wasn't about Batman with Bill Finger as a cameo. It was about Bill Finger. And that was the first time I remember registering what happened. And as a writer, when I write nonfiction, I'm just drawn to untold stories. And even better if it's something that's supposed to be high profile but is an untold story. So it was a collision of me loving the Super Friends in the 70s to me becoming a writer who likes to fill gaps in history. And it was all of that in one chemical, you know, formula.
Well, let me sort of take the baton with that. You wrote a kid's book, and it's a great kid's book, drawn by Ty Templeton.
Yep.
But you did enough research for a 200,000-word biography.
Yeah.
So, as I asked you probably the first day I met you.
Yes.
How come you haven't written that 200,000-word biography?
Right. Yeah. That's a good question. I'm a creative person, so math is not my strong suit, but I know 200,000 words is way more than 2,500, which is, I think, the max that I'm capable of. Yeah, I know. I don't know. I mean, it's not that I never would, but I feel like I've been telling the story in multiple, like throughout the multiverse, basically, and, you know, as a book, and then in my speaking engagements, and now as a film, and I feel like I'm telling it in three dimensions, and it's not to say that I never would do that, and I'm sure someone will one day, and if it's not me, I'll be first in line cheering that person on, but I do have other interests besides Bill Finger. You wouldn't know it from my social media circa 2006 to 2015, but I do, so I'm giving some of that material a shot, but you never know. I'm not gone yet.
Well, what was it about the injustice done to Bill Finger in a world full of injustice? I mean, what was it about that spoke to you?
Well, I mean, as I think everyone here knows, the comics industry is not unique in the fact that it doesn't always treat its own well. And I felt Bill was the poster child for that. I felt he was the original martyr. I hate to use the word, but he was the original person that was pushed to the side. So I felt like starting with him could make a big statement, and for a lot of other people out there who need their stories to be told. And I hear about them a lot. I have people who ask me, would you consider doing this or that? And I would love to do all of them. There's so many. But Batman, you know, being Batman and being as early as he was in the history of superheroes, I just feel like that is the way to set the tone for this important topic, that we need to be taking it more seriously, writing books about it, pushing it as hard as we can in a civilized, respectful way. But that's what it took. I mean, everyone wanted it. You guys wanted it. Everybody wanted it. I mean, you go back to when I was starting my research in 2006, I looked at every possible and every nook and cranny for information about Bill, message boards and everywhere. And there was clearly an army, but it was not a mobilized army. So I just thought, let's start with Batman. He can lead an army.
So I'm a big fan of the book, Bill the Boy Wonder. And I think anyone interested in his story, whether you have kids or not, should read it. The story's great. There's all these little Easter eggs. But then in the back, there's this text portion that kind of is the biography of Bill Finger. So what made you go, I like that comment about the multiverse. Maybe talk just a little bit about the story, about why you saw it as, you know, as a film, as opposed to, you know, Danny's giant biography that you could knock somebody out with.
Yeah.
Why that? How'd that work? And
yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe just establish, I mean, we're sort of talking around what happened to Bill, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to the big twist yet. So, I had already been a published author in the children's space, so that was just where I resided. But I really did it in picture book form because that's a comic book. And it's not only that, but it's for all ages. And if I had written the adult version, the prose only version, It would have had a market, perhaps. I mean, I don't know that it would have had as big of a market as what some people tell me. I hope so, but I don't know. But I knew if I wrote it as an all-ages picture book, I would broaden, maybe double my market. I could speak about it to you and comics people. I could speak about it to kids everywhere. I could speak about it to adults who are not interested in comics at all. And this happens all the time. It's one of the most rewarding things about this particular story is that sometimes I'm speaking to captive audiences. They're forced to be there, like when I do school visits. They don't sign up. They go to the cafeteria and they have an assembly. They can't walk out and protest. This is not serious school work. This is Batman. I'm out of here. They can't do that. So, but then there are also captive adults. I mean, you know, when I speak at libraries or conferences, I mean, you know, I could be speaking to a room where half of the people actually physically tense up when they hear that someone's going to talk about superheroes for an hour because it's so dominant in our culture. But then those same people will come up to me afterward and say, you know, when I heard that I had to listen to an hour about Batman, I thought, man, this is going to suck. But they're crying because the story is so emotional. And I get it. There's plenty of more emotional things going on in the world, especially right now. We hear about it every day. I'm not trying to equate, but it is a very tragic story. And it moves people. And that appealed to me, and I wanted to be able to talk about it from, you know, really young up through as old as they were on the show up.
Maybe maybe we should tell some of that story.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah. What's the what, you know, where we start from? You know, that someone else took credit and got credit, and then what you found, you
okay,
know, to chisel away. Because I'm sure, you know, people know name. They might not.
Maybe we start with a simple question.
Yes.
So, Mark, who created Batman?
Well, the last time I appeared at Comic-Con was 5 years ago, and that was, this is a spoiler alert, before the Batman credit line changed, before the movie. And I was on a panel called Who Created Batman? And it was a really great panel. There were probably 6 or 7 or 8 of us. And I wanted to just stand up, say Bill Finger, and drop the mic and walk out. But I'm not that theatrical, so I didn't do that. But Batman was a joint effort, as I'm sure you probably know, by cartoonist Bob Kane and by Bill Finger. I mean, they were the two that were there at the start. There were dozens that got involved within the first couple of years. But for me, a creation story is about who's there when it comes into this world, regardless of who's there the next day. So that was Bill and Bob. And as you might know, Bob came up with the name Batman, and he had a sketch that looked like... Sorry, this is completely out of order. Sorry, you're going to see some things that are going to shock you and scare you. Just ignore those things.
So, all ages.
Yeah, sorry, this kind of disco slide presentation. So that is a recreation by Ty Templeton of what the original Batman, as created by Bob Kane, would have looked like. And Bill overhauled it the same day, as far as we know, out loud, just saying, well, if we're going to call him Batman, let's make him look like this, this, and this. So a lot of the key visual elements fell into place within that first 24 hours. And that is all that Bob Kane had in his hands when he walked into National and sold the idea the next weekday morning. A sketch. The name was from Bob. The sketch, the essence, which set the tone for what this character would become, was from Bill. And then Bill wrote the first story, which he later admitted was a crib of a shadow story. But he then went on to become a pioneering, groundbreaking writer, very cinematic. Artists loved him. He took influences from the pulps and from film noir and from novels and made Batman into actually a believable, three-dimensional, motivated character, which a lot of comics characters and pulp characters were not. So if it were for Bob, you know, if it was, you know, Bob Kane, it would be that. And we wouldn't be sitting here. So let me just take a quick poll before because I know we're skipping around here. Raise your hand if you have more than a Wikipedia knowledge of Bill Finger's contributions. Raise your hand if you know very little about Bill Finger. All right, well, thanks for not walking out. So Bill went on to, I'll just do the short list and then we can go back to Q&A. Bill, again, wrote the first Batman story. He went on to write many of the now classic Batman stories of the first 25 years. He is credited for creating Batman's origin, Occasionally, you'll see Gardner Fox as being credited, but I think it's pretty official by this point that it was Bill. DC Comics lists Bill. He wrote the first stories with Commissioner Gordon, Robin, Catwoman, the Joker, the Penguin, the Scarecrow. He named Gotham City. He named the Batmobile and the Batcave. He nicknamed Batman the Dark Knight. And that was just on Tuesday. And again, in all that time, he was never officially credited. He was never unofficially credited, with the exception of a couple of mentions of his name in a letter column in the 60s, after he'd been working for, again, almost 25 years. And he co-wrote one episode of the Batman TV show, for which he was credited. And I don't want to say much about it, because there's a beautiful scene that explains it in the documentary, which I encourage you to watch if you haven't. And that was the only time that he saw his name officially on Batman in his lifetime.
And that's a big deal, because like every time you would see Batman, it would say, created by Bob Kane. And it was always sometimes the little, you know, sketch that he did of his name. And what does that mean to have that byline?
Well, I mean, like anybody, you want to get recognized for your work. And, you know, yeah.
Also financial aspect.
For money.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and financial as well. I mean, he was getting his page rate. And I wish we knew more about his thought process. And that was something that obviously any writer who's writing about him has to get into. You know, was he okay with it? I mean, I've had people that come up to me after they hear the whole story and they say, you know, maybe he was fine with it. Maybe he just didn't care. Maybe he wanted to stay in the business and make his page rate, wasn't out for more than that. And, you know, we just don't know for sure. He was never asked, or he was never documented as answering that. But, you know, I'm pretty sure he wanted more than he got. So.
I know, this was not in a vacuum. He created or co-created.
Thank you, Stan. This is Danny. This is Daniel Dan. Sorry about that. Thank you, guys. All right, your long national nightmare is over. The name tags are here. Okay. Keep everybody straight.
I mean, he worked on and co-created the original Green Lantern.
Yeah.
With
O'Dell.
Yeah. And Wildcat, with Erwin Hayes. What else is there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, even just creating...
Lana Lang story.
Yeah, Lana Lang. He wrote the first comic story with Krypton. He, if you didn't hear that, he co-created the original Green Lantern, Alan Scott. So any one of those things that I listed would have been enough. But...
So you didn't just read that story and go, gee, what a shame, what's for dinner? Yeah, I mean, you...
Yeah, that...
What lit a fire in you to try to do something about it?
Well, I mean, it enraged me, actually, and... It just wasn't consistent with what we all love about why we're here. I mean, we love, you know, kids don't articulate why they love superheroes. They just like a good story and a good adventure. But when I look back at myself, I see a kid who was a rule follower, who was, you know, not a Boy Scout, but Boy Scout-esque. I mean, I was just, you know, I couldn't go out until my homework was done. Not because my parents told me, because that was my rule. I just was a goody-goody in a way, and it wasn't right. It was not right that he was not credited, and I was not, you know, the first or even the 100,000th to say that. But I felt like I was in a position to try to help do something about it because I was a writer and because I don't quit. I mean, you can ask Brad. I mean, we met when he was working on a Superman, a Siegel and Schuster project, and I was as well. And I was this wide-eyed, innocent person who sees people as friends first and colleagues second. And I was always emailing him, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And he's like, whoa, 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 Nelly. You seem like a nice guy, but I only have time for 100 questions today. The 101st is going to tip me over the edge. So Brad was we saw how we work, you know, we both are very deep divers and very into the details and uncovering things that haven't been revealed. And, I just felt like I was capable of doing that for Bill. I knew that I wouldn't give up. I knew that I wouldn't be deterred, and I just felt like we all want this, and I might as well just step up, take my shot at the plate, and see if it works.
So what did you, and I totally, I mean, you never say die. If it's out there in the universe, Mark can find it. And it's truly amazing to behold. And like Danny said, it's really inspirational to me. So what did you look for? Like, what did you find in that, you know, so you're trying to build the case, tell a story to the public. And though you're right in saying people, you know, who are really into comics knew this story, kind of the fringes of it, but you're the only one who was doing it. It was just you. So what did you do? What did you find? What did you look for?
So I quickly realized that if I were to stick with what had already been published, it would just be, you know, a small circle. It was the same information everywhere. And I realized to find more, I needed to go where no one had gone and look for people that had never been spoken to. And I quickly realized that that would probably not be comics people, because they've told their stories. So I had to find people that were not in comics. And the first person I looked for, or I should say found, was a guy named Charles Sinclair. He was a longtime writing partner of Bill's and one of his good friends for many years. He was the guy that co-wrote that Batman TV show with Bill. And his name's Charles Sinclair. So you Google Charles Sinclair, and that's, you know, approximately an eighth of the country. So I literally just started calling every one of them in the phone book, starting in, and someone did suggest to me if I was going to start in New York, not LA, and I don't know, remember why, and I did. And I just called the first Charles Sinclair in the directory, and it was the right one. 83 years old, memory like a steel trap, and he opened this up for me. I mean, if not for Charles, I wouldn't have given up. I wouldn't have, but it was certainly nice that, you know, I had a home run the first try, and it just made me feel like, well, if I found this guy, I can find more. And that's exactly what I did. And I wasn't trained to do this. I mean, unless you count hide and seek. I mean, I just kept looking I emailed Danny. I emailed everybody that I could find. What do you know? And just tell me anything you know, anybody that could know him. I mean, it got ridiculous. Somebody told me that he didn't fly. He never got on a plane. He was actually offered a chance to write. He wrote some of the Superman Filmation cartoons in the 60s. And they wanted him to fly out to California to work on more, to have a meeting. He wouldn't go. Even if, I mean, you know, talk about money. His fear of flying overrode the chance to get more work. So he never went on a plane in his life. And someone told me that the farthest they knew he went was he went to a Passover Seder, of all things, in Texas, of all places. And this person, it might have been Charles, remembered the name of the host. Her name was Dorcas Young. And I freaking found Dorcas Young in a retirement home.
People with weird names are easier to find.
Well, Young, yeah, Dorcas, that's true.
I found that in my research.
Yeah, that is true.
It's either them or it's not.
Yeah. So I was, and so she was the first, and that was really, you know, that really was the propeller, I would say. And then Charles mentioned that Bill had he was married to a woman named Portia, who had a son named Fred, and we'll get to that in a bit, I'm sure. And then he divorced Portia and remarried, we didn't know this, but he did remarry. And I found his second wife, who was also in her mid-80s and also had never been contacted by an author before. So these two people had a vast landscape of knowledge that had never been documented. And that was, again, the first few weeks of the research. So it really spurred me on. And there's a lot more to it, but I'll let you guys jump in.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, as a historian of sorts myself, I found it interesting that you stalked Bill Finger's building.
Yes.
That you stalked old people.
I stalked old people, yeah, building. I did. I stood outside his first wife, Portia, died in 1990, which is the modern era, essentially, for a researcher anyway. So I went to that building in New York on a nice summer day like today, and I just stood in front of it until someone came in or out. And a woman came home from work, and I said, there's no non-creepy way to say this, but I basically said, who's the person that's lived in your building the longest? And as she slowly backed away, she said, why don't you ask the super, which I did. And maybe 10 minutes later, I was sitting in an apartment in that building with two women in their 70s in their nightgowns at 6 p.m., who were regaling me with stories of Portia Finger. They knew her. They remembered her vividly. She was a flamboyant personality. And so I did stuff like that because, you know, I don't know about those women now, but, I mean, it was the last gasp of time that we could find people who knew Bill and his family personally. And I, including in the research, were 9 golden agers, like Jerry Robinson and Shelley Moldoff. And I tracked them all down, wasn't so hard in this community, and I interviewed all of them. And of course, all 9 have since passed away.
Arnold Drake was one of them.
Arnold Drake, Lucier Schwartz, Alvin Schwartz. So they all told me stories that, you know, if someone hadn't asked them, and in some cases, you know, I caught them just at the end.
Well, that's rule number 1 of history and biography is interview the oldest source first.
Ask immediately and don't hold back. One of the people I was actually Arnold Drake. He said, you should talk to George Kasdan. He was one of the writers and maybe more on the Superman cartoons that I mentioned before. He said, you should really talk to George. George knew Bill. So as soon as we hung up, and Arnold did not know how to reach George. He said, I know he's in California. So as soon as we hung up, I looked up George Kasdan. He had died that day. So again, as Danny said, don't wait.
Yeah, don't say, oh, I'll get to them next week.
No. Nope.
So now Bill, he died pretty young himself, right?
He was 59. Yeah. Yeah, 1974 he died. With no fanfare whatsoever. I mean, I talk about this with kids and I say, there was literally one article in a DC Comics fanzine, not even a mainstream comic that a lot of people would see, and that was it. There was a second editorial by Carmine Infantino and another limited edition DC Comics publication, but no mainstream press covered this. There was nothing. So to help them understand what that means, because they all know Stan Lee, and I said, you know, when Stan passed away, if you caught wind of that, which even kids did, that's the kind of attention Bill would have gotten if he died today, of course, and even maybe 10 years later. But he missed that, you know, that magic, you know, turning point in fandom where everybody suddenly was paying attention to that kind of thing. You know, Neil Adams was in this room just before. I always said if Bill had lived just a few more years, maybe he would have been the next person that Neil teamed up with to try to make things right, because he did it for Siegel and Schuster. He was on the team to do that. So, you know, we'll never know, but...
So now what, you know, you, and I think a key part of what you did was everybody said, you know, well, his son, Fred, didn't have any, right? Because he was gay, people assumed he didn't have any children.
Yes.
However, you found out.
Yes. So that was the first, day one, I think I emailed Roy Thomas at Alter Ego magazine and of many other things in comics history, of course, and said, you know, send me everything you've got on Bill Finger. And he wrote back and said, sorry, dude, we don't have anything. I mean, there's not much out there. So, but one thing I think he did tell me was that he did have a son named Fred, who was interviewed once, and that was in print. That was in an Alter Ego magazine. But as far as we knew, Fred was Bill's only child. And it turns out that Fred was gay. And it turns out that Fred had died 15 years before I started this. So I didn't stop and really analyze it. I just thought, well, if he was gay and he died in the early 90s, that's the end of the bloodline. I mean, and if he was Bill's only child, there's not going to be anybody left. I mean, it just didn't seem like a lead worth pursuing. But I was still pursuing any possible connection to Bill Finger. And I ended up finding his nephew, who's a man in his, I'd say, I've never met him, but I think he's in his 60s. And he was on the West Coast. I was on the East Coast when I called him. And he didn't really know much. He said, you know, I'm sorry. He was my uncle, and I remember him giving me comics, but I just don't know anything that would help you. However, you probably want to look for his granddaughter. And I said, it was like in The Mask, you know, or in Looney Tunes when the eyes come all the way out of the head and the tongue drops. And there's a weird sound, which I can't make because I told you I'm not theatrical. And I said to him, he doesn't have a granddaughter. And then I heard myself as if I know better than the family. I'm like, shut your mouth. Just listen. That's what we tell. Just listen. You're not supposed to be talking. And he said, no, he was gay, but he did have he did have a daughter. So Bill has a granddaughter. And that right away, turned this story hard, fast on a dime. I mean, then it was not just a picture book. It was an important story that had to be told for a larger audience, and meaning that it wasn't just going to be something that would be one and done in a book, and I'd move on. It turned into a mission to find this granddaughter who is here. Is she here? Athena? No, she's not here. She's on the premises, not in the room though. Who changed everything? I mean, in my mind, she was the heir to Batman, and so I had to, you know, pivot, drop everything to try to find this heir that, you know, I assumed never existed.
Well, say why that find was so important.
Well, because
beyond than just, you know, oh, there's something else to add to the family tree.
Right. Yes. So. I'm no lawyer, but I know this much. To challenge a credit line or anything that is under contract in this kind of context, you need to be an heir. You can't be a cousin or a friend or a writer. You have to be an heir. You can be a writer and, you know, shout it from the rooftops and plaster it over social media and maybe get a petition and have, you know, 3,000 people sign it, but no one's going to pay attention to that. They pay attention when it becomes a legal situation. And so finding an heir meant that there was a chance to approach this subject from a legal perspective and really try to get that credit line changed. And Athena will tell you. In fact, it's in my book, and she says it in the movie. When I found her, and I can tell you how I did that in a second, but when I found her, her first response was, in a very quiet voice, you know, that no one had ever reached out to her, and she said, I was born 2 years after my grandfather died, so you could probably tell me more about him than I could tell you. And then she had a pause and she said, and I'm very interested in what you have to say. So I said, well, first things first, got to change that credit line. So she said, well, you know, Mark, I just don't know. I mean, I've been living my adult life without this, and I just don't know where to start.
Well, sort of fill in something I think Athena told me was that not only did she know about it, but when she would tell like her friends at school that her grandfather created Batman, they would make fun of her.
Yeah, no one believed her.
Yeah.
I mean, these little kids are already, you know, citing their sources. They're like, well, if you can't show me in print, it's not true. Which is, you know, good for them, but not good for comics history.
Which I find is the case often with sort of the descendants of comics creators, and probably in other fields too, that not everybody in the family is motivated or interested.
Yes.
Like it's some tale that grandpa used to tell, and
right.
Who knows what the hell he was talking about. And,
yeah.
And I'm busy with my career and my family. And,
yeah. You know, I mean, she was a young mom.
So there's always one act member who's more interested than the others, and I guess until you kind of got in touch with Athena. I think you kind of catalyzed her into being passionate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's really beneficial to be the outsider with nothing to gain or lose. I mean, you know, I wasn't DC Comics. I wasn't Finger Family. I was a nobody who believed in this. And when I told Athena that I think she has a case and she has an obligation to fight, which is kind of, you know, a little obnoxious to say that. I don't know her, and I said that. I think it's your responsibility to do this in so many words. And she said that, you know, my whole life I've been told not to bother because it's just too big, and my family has tried. My father tried. Bill tried in some way, and it just didn't happen. So, you know, why should I, basically? And I said, well, I mean, it's a new world. This is, you know, you've got an army waiting to be mobilized, and we can reach them now. So I think we should try. And she was hesitant, and she said, you know, all I care about is credit. I want the credit to change. And I said, that's what I want. Let's do it. And so I had no idea what to do, but we just started feeling our way, talking to people, and it spread. It took, you know, 9 years, but it spread. So, yeah, her family was discouraging it, but not because they didn't want it. They just didn't think it was going to be a good use of her time. But like I said, I was able to, I just dropped right in and didn't have any, no baggage. I was just some guy that, you know, seemed to make her think it was doable.
So now there's a credit. What does the credit read now?
So the credit, effective October 2015, reads Batman created by Bob Kane with Bill Finger.
And Mark did that. So this is something I've always wanted.
part in the end, but that's nice of you.
This is something I've always wanted to ask you. Where were you when that news came down? I remember seeing it on Twitter, and
yes,
everyone was like, whoa. But where
yeah.
were you?
I was on my yacht in the Mediterranean, like most children's authors. I think Beyonce was there. I can't remember if it was that day. No, I was in my humble home office in Maryland. Just, you know, I knew that it was coming. I didn't know the exact terms of it or exactly when, but yeah, it was a big day. It was, I mean, as you can tell, I like to talk, and I was not talking that much that day. I was just catatonic, soaking it up, and yeah, maybe we should take some questions. Yeah. Why with, not and? So again, not a lawyer, not a DC Comics representative, but my take is that it's a concession. It's a compromise. You know, they're not going to take Bob's name off. They're not going to put Bill's name first. They're not going to put an and, but they're going to put his name there. And it's, I think it's their way of trying to play both sides in a way. And when people, and there are people, believe it or not, that are even, you know, more indignant about that than me. I just say, look, you know, for 76 years we thought his name would not be there at all. I don't care if it's an asterisk in the middle or an emoticon, as long as it's there. It's good for me.
If you had a question.
So did you get people? Yeah. So my question is, had you met with Bill Finger, had he still been alive, what would have been the first question you would have asked him?
Do you want to fight for this? Because you've got people on your side. I don't think he felt that very much in his lifetime. It was a different generation, you know? Not quite. It was even before the Greatest Generation. You know, you just take what you get. You don't complain. He wasn't a complainer. He just, you know, he agreed to this and he lived with it. Yeah.
Who did you approach at DC about changing the credit, and how receptive were they? And also, which creators lined up behind you to sort of support this idea?
I was not directly involved with the legal side of things. I mean, I put Athena in touch with someone at DC in the legal department, and I was in touch with a couple of people myself, but I was not leading the charge on the legal side. I'm not qualified to do that. As far as comics creators coming to my, or not, I don't forget how you said it, but, you know, being on board, Team Finger, I think probably all of them were on Team Finger, but nobody really, you know, said, what can I do? Which is fine. I mean, like I said, I had the benefit of being a nobody. And I could, you know, at the beginning it means that, you know, people may not listen to you. But if you start to show that, look, I found his second wife. I found his granddaughter. I found out what his real name was. I found out what happened after he died. It's not what they're saying on the message boards. Then people start to listen. And then people were on board. And then when the movie came out, and maybe even the book, I can't remember, then I got a lot of, you know, I shouldn't say a lot, but, you know, there were people that, you know, reached out through social media.
You said the movie, the documentary.
The documentary, yeah.
It's on Hulu.
On Hulu, yeah. It's called Batman and Bill. So, yeah, it's, you know, I would have done it no matter what. I would have done it if they said, nobody's going to support you. I would have done it anyway.
And if you see that movie, I'm in it, I'm moderator.
Yeah, so we don't lose in the questioning. Go see, I mean, you know, zip up your Hulu streamer machine. It is, so who's seen it?
Oh.
Awesome, right?
Yeah.
It's the greatest comics documentary I've ever seen.
Remember the shirt? The shirt is directly from the movie.
And the last scene made me cry. That's all. Oh, I just admitted that to everyone. So yeah, really go see it if you're interested in this story. It's so good.
What was the question you started to ask, sir, in the hat?
So when all of this stuff came forward and it was going to go into a legal battle, did you ever have to give evidence? Did you prepare evidence to give to the legal team?
Yeah, well, I gave the family everything I had, yeah. And, it, you know, but by the way, that was, I'm sorry. Thank you very much for what
you
just
said.
It was never, in my view, a question of proving what Bill did. It was a question of challenging the contract that Bob had set up. So it wasn't that anyone was saying, well, he didn't really do this, or he didn't really do enough. I mean, it was very clear that he did.
You mean the contract that nobody's allowed to see and nobody's ever
seen? Yeah, the mythical contract. Only Bigfoot is more mysterious. So yeah, it wasn't so much that. But, you know, you can show how compellingly overwhelming it is that he should be, you know, you can show how, just how much has should be done, as he did, and what should be done because of that.
Maybe this gentleman?
Oh, sorry, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, all that's already out there. None of them had anything new on that front. We know that Gotham came from the New York City phone book. In fact, Michael Uslan, who's also on site, the guy who brought Batman to the big screen in 1989, he found what might have been the actual advertisement in the New York phone book that Bill would have looked at, because Bill said he looked in the phone book and saw an advertisement for Gotham Jewelers. So Michael found one that's for Gotham Jewelers. And a lot of the other characters, you know, Bill did go on record at the end of his life. He, you know, gave an interview to Steranko, who's also on the premises, and to Jerry Bales, and a couple other times in his life that, you know, we know a lot of that. So there were no bombshells with that in my research. Yeah.
What are your favorite stories about Batman by Bill Finger?
My favorite Batman comics by Bill Finger. So the earliest ones. Because it's just so raw and so new, and especially before Robin, because it's really hard, those of you that are writers know, to write a character who's alone. He has no one to talk to. That's where Robin came from. Bill said, you know, I need someone there so that this doesn't get awkward all the time. And so those early ones are really, you know, pure, undistilled Bill Finger. And then some of his later stuff gets pretty cerebral and pretty, you know, he was a very thoughtful guy. And you could tell how he was actually self-educated, but you could tell by his stories, you know, this is not a guy that, you know, you can mess around with. He could hold up his end of any conversation. He read prolifically, you know, and it showed.
As Mark knows, I have to run to another panel.
Yeah.
But I do want to be sure, if you are ever in the Bronx, New York, on the Grand Concourse in
192nd Street. It's alongside the Poe Park.
Poe Park. Yeah. There's a street now called Bill Finger Way.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that Mark is responsible for.
Thank you. A little round for Danny A. Fingeroff for stepping in at the last minute. All right. So we have time for one more question. Yes. Yeah.
What is particularly fascinating to me about this story, as opposed to like the Siegel and Shuster story, is that it seems that this injustice was perpetrated not by the company, but by one creator upon another. And I was wondering if you could speak about that a little bit without, you know, I'm not trying to cause a ruckus or anything like that.
No, well, people like ruckuses.
Sure.
if things go as planned, no one talks about it later.
Right.
In my, you know, simple allegory, you know, Siegel and Shuster, and Brad can you know, correct me on this or step in on this, but Siegel and Shuster is a David and Goliath story, you know, the little guy against the big guy, and Finger and Cain is a Cain and Abel story, you know, brother versus brother, and it's got a literal Cain in both of them. You know, and that's, for me, what it came down to. You know, the company is not going to go to bat for Bill if Bill doesn't go to bat for himself. And I can use puns because Bill used puns, by the way. So that's why I said that's a tribute. It's an homage. So yeah, that's what I mean. That's a very simplistic way of putting it, but that's how I always saw it. Well, I think they're going to evict us. But thank you all very much for coming.